Welcome to Lead Time Chats, where you can listen in on unscripted conversations between leaders in tech to help you make remote teamwork a little bit less challenging. I'm Jean, and I'll be your host. Lead Time Chats is brought to you by Range. Range helps remote teams work better together with asynchronous check-ins, integrated team building, fewer and more effective meetings, and easy goal tracking. When you run your team with Range, you'll always know what's going on without having to be in back-to-back meetings. To learn more about Range, you can check it out at range.co. Hi, Douglas. Welcome to Lead Time Chats.
Hey, it's good to be here.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk to you today about a topic. I mean, I've had a lot of episodes about meetings, but there's a specific topic that I think, you know, people bring up and they feel very disempowered or just like confused about where to start, which is like facilitating large meetings, or how do you structure large meetings so that they're better, you know, 50 plus people. And I know as the founder of Voltage Control, which is a change agency that helps teams work better together, that's like something that you've, you know, trained leaders to do better. So yeah, I'm super excited to have you here to talk about that specifically.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that topic because especially early on in the days when it was, you know, me and starting to build a team, we were doing a lot of gatherings that were quite large. I mean, we're talking 200, 500 person conference kind of settings where Wow. people are wanting to imbibe some innovation into the work, you know, whether it's an offsite or someone trying to make their conference a little more exciting. And so definitely something pre-pandemic that we did a lot of and then started to adapt into the virtual spaces as well. So it's a fun topic for sure. When we get yeah. to larger groups, the dynamics are a little different.
Right. And I think I remember when I was at Google and they'd have like TGIF and like, I think a lot of those larger all company events in person, you know, they kind of complement it with like food and drinks and kind of the social surroundings of like the actual event and the programming. And I think people have found it challenging to get that same level of engagement and excitement when it's kind of just a Zoom meeting and everyone's got their videos off. And yeah, it's challenging. So,
you know,
yeah.
I think the thing I'll say about that is it comes back to the core issue that so many people face, even in the pandemic or with any kind of change, which is we there's a new territory, there's some new place we want to go, and it's like, let's just take what we were doing before and plop it into this new space, and then when we do that, the perspective is usually on the tools and the mm-hmm. and the best practices and things, right? Whereas if we take a step back and we look at fundamentals and what are the principles and the purpose that's driving us, then we can design from a place that's maybe a little more sacred, right? Like that we right. can really honor why we're together. And then the constraints don't seem as scary. But if we're trying to say, let's do exactly what we did, but now virtually, or exactly what we did, but now bigger, or whatever, mm-hmm. those translations, we got to be really careful about that, because if we're not getting back to the purpose and the principles, you know, we can get off track.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And it reminds me of like, I think, I don't know if people are still doing this, but I think a lot of people, you know, try like, oh, you just have your, you know, an always on Zoom meeting. And it's like, you're in the office. And for me, like having worked remotely for two and a half years now, that sounds just awful. Like I, you know, when I'm at my desk and I'm not in a meeting, I expect that no one's going to start talking to me like in my headphone. Right. And so the idea that could happen, but I know a lot of teams that have tried that as a like, hey, like this is, that will help replicate the in-office experience. I imagine the same has been tried with meetings.
That's true. You know, that particularly always recommend people come back to norms and agreements. So what are we as a team appreciate about the way we work, the way we gather, the way we are together? And let's be explicit about that. You know, let's make a team charter. Let's document it so that we can like hold ourselves accountable to the way we aspire to be, especially if we want to try new things. And then we can periodically review it and come back to, wait, did we, how's that always on Zoom meeting treating, how's that working out? Are we enjoying that or not? Or how, you know, should we adapt it? What should we do here? So always good to come back to some of those agreements and talk about, hey, how do we want to be together?
Yeah, I really like that. I guess specifically for larger meetings, like what are some of the problems or common issues that you hear about from teams that you've coached?
Well, I would say the number one thing is, should it be a larger meeting? And I think there's a whole category of larger meetings that is the result of meeting FOMO, where people want to be there because if they're not there, they're going to miss out. And I think that's indicative of bigger issues within the organization. One of them being a lack of trust, transparency. Maybe we're not doing a great job of documenting and disseminating information. We're not telling the story around the meetings we're having. And so sometimes we have big meetings that really should be small meetings.
With like notes or something.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And then the other thing that I'll say about big meetings that shouldn't be big meetings are like all hands meetings typically are one way. And maybe we just should make Loom videos and just stop doing those things.
Yeah. So questioning, right, before you get to the like, you know, tips, tactical tips for large meetings, consider if it should be a large meeting at all.
Yeah. And then in that consideration process, we can think about the why, the purpose of the gathering, and we can get really clear on what are we wanting to accomplish from an outcome standpoint? How we even measure if it was successful? That's a pretty good way to think about like our purpose and some design constraints. And then if we use that to lean in to how we approach it, then we're going to be in a much better perspective. And you'll find that people's ideas tend to be more aligned with things that are going to be successful because we're rooted in that purpose. And then and we'll have more grace for any of our failures as well, because if something's a little off, our tolerance for those things being off will be much higher, because we all agree that like, yeah, we're here for a good reason. It's not a big deal that this thing's broken over here. Or this is not as perfect as it could be, because at least we know we're here for a good reason and we're going to make the best of our time together. So it's like the purpose can't be understated, because it can really work wonders just to get everyone motivated and everyone supporting where we're going.
So in what situations would you say it is appropriate to have a larger meeting, say larger, like, you know, 50 plus people?
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's moments of celebration come to mind, you know, like we might want to come together and really honor the fact that we all did a bunch of work. Cause let's say that we're an asynchronous organization and we're working in pockets in really efficient ways because we've got mechanisms in place that allow us to do that. And then here we are at a point where we've successfully navigated a project together asynchronously. Wow, that's a moment we should acknowledge. And are we just going to like all say high fives like in a document that we all randomly see at different times? You know, it's like probably not as effective as getting together and just celebrating. So that's team health and celebration. Wonderful time. Team connection, like broader, like organizational departmental connection, building relationships. These things can't be done asynchronously in the same way they can be done synchronously. So whether it's in person or remote, like making sure we carve out time that's dedicated to those things. Also, I think that if we're really looking at some of these kind of moments where we might interweave some of our understandings about what the future might hold, those moments can be really powerful to do in large gatherings too. As long as we got to be careful though, because we don't want like really, really large brainstorms are kind of ineffective, right? It's like people always talk about, oh, I miss the serendipity of the office, but it's like, well, I don't know if the research bears that out, but certainly there, if we're being intentional about the arc of a journey, like some change we're going on or some initiative we're working on, there might be moments where we want to bring a group together to help kind of codify a plan, celebrate a moment, or even just like integrate a bunch of understanding so that we can like, so that we can develop or refine some prototype plan together. And so the more and more stakeholders you have across this initiative, that will raise the number of people that might have to be there. And of course, like we talk about communities of practice or industries or kind of conferences and things like that, they often want to gather to bring the minds together. You know, it's in a way it's like the forum, I think, is a word that we hear quite often, or a mastermind, right? Like those are great moments when the group might get quite large, because we want to be inclusive of the whole community. So those are moments when large gatherings tend to be really kind of germane, right? We wouldn't want to say, okay, well, only 10% of us of this association is going to meet, right? It's like, that's kind of a requirement for it to be large.
Yeah. So say a team has determined, okay, this is a time where we want to celebrate or, you know, mark some milestone. I think for a lot of people, and I think there's probably a lot of obvious ways that you might structure something like that, but I think for a lot of people, it's hard to, right, imagine meetings of that size that aren't just like, you know, everyone's on Zoom and then there's like one person kind of speaking, or maybe there's some agenda where people, you know, different people speak at different times. But like, I guess, how would you go about designing a large meeting? Like, what are the principles you think about when you go about designing a meeting like that?
Yeah, you know, I think one thing is, if we want it to be inclusive, truly inclusive, and we want to create something that's participatory, we had to think about tools and approaches that might allow us to do that. And that's, I would say that's a principle that I hold dear, is that we are going to include everyone, right? We're going to unleash everyone. If we're really going to take the time to come together, how do we make sure it's not just a one-way presentation? I'm kind of done with the one-way presentation for the most part. And to the point where, you know, when we do like webinars, you know, we try to make those participatory, right? Like, it's like any moment we can that might include a lot, where a lot of people might show up, how do we hand them the marker, you know? Mm-hmm. And so coming back to, you mentioned principles or basics. I mean, that's one, design and participation, really key. Also recommend that people, just like designing any meeting or gathering, Think about the journey or the arc that you want to take people on. It's not just, I'm not a huge fan. The word agenda, because it's been around so long and so misused and abused, that I don't have a lot of love for that word. And because oftentimes when you see an agenda, it's like a list of topics.
Right.
And rarely does it actually think about the participant and how they're going to show up and how we're going to take care of them and how they're invited in. You know, what is the first moment that they experience in this thing, and how does that make them feel, and how do you want them to feel? And then likewise, how do they end? And if nothing else, think about there's some really interesting research that came out of Disney that talked about how they could measure the rating someone would give of their experience at Disney based on three things. And it's really interesting, because they would have people rate their experiences all day long, and they could take all those ratings and distill it down into three things that mattered: your first experience, your last experience, and your peak experience. So if you are designing anything, but definitely large meetings are, because, you know, small meetings, they tend to be shorter. Large meetings, if we're going to invest that many people, they tend to be a little bit longer. So you have a little bit more, you know, clay to work with there. Think about how you're going to bring people in, how you're going to usher them in, how are you going to send them at the end of the day, and then what kind of peak moment do you want to create for them? And then if you just scaffold stuff around that, you'll probably be okay, right? As long as you create those moments. And of course, as long as we are honoring our purpose, always come back to, if you have a crazy idea around, oh, we should do this icebreaker, come back and say, how is that serving the purpose? And, you know, the idea that you had for an icebreaker might not align with the purpose, but maybe you could tweak it You know, maybe you change one word or reshift the prompt, the invitation, and all of a sudden it does align. And now people are going to feel that much deeper. They're going to have a more of a connection to it because that through line with the purpose and this arc of these three critical moments really tie together. The mm-hmm. other thing I'll say is, the more people you have to think about all the inner connections, right? If you got two people, it's basically just one point of connection, right? It's, I'm connected to you right now. If there's three mm-hmm. people in the room, well, now you've got more expanding connections. And it amplifies exponentially, right? The more people you have in the room, if you were to really have everybody talk to everyone, it becomes nearly impossible. And so mm-hmm. you need to think about how you might group people together into breakouts or subgroups so that you can allow people to have their own conversations. And that's what will create more opportunity for participation. You can also invite people to just think quietly to themselves. I want you all to take a minute just to really think about what the CEO just said. Instead of how many times have we heard that, right? It's usually like, any questions? It's like, well, let's just take a minute to reflect on what he just said or what she just said mm-hmm. and really internalize what it means for me. And then maybe let's have some questions.
Yeah.
Because then we've had time to process. So that's another recommendation I have for any meeting, any session. Slow it down. Give people time to like digest some of the moments that are happening. I think there's a tendency to just stuff as much stuff as we can into our experiences and give it room to breathe.
Yeah, I think people are generally uncomfortable with silences. But if you can say, like, we have on Range's meeting tool, we have like a timer. And oftentimes before, you know, we go around the room and create an agenda, we do like a dynamic agenda, we'll have like a timer. I'll say like, okay, I'm going to set the timer for 1 minute. So, you know, think about if you have anything to show, like show a demo of, if there's anything you want feedback on, I'll have like a bunch of bullet points and then we'll, you know, run the timer, a little bell will ring, and then we'll start. But it's like, it feels less uncomfortable because I said, hey, I'm going to start this timer, and then the bell will ring at the end of it. And then kind of just like laying out what's going to happen for people, I find is also very effective.
Yeah, setting expectations and modeling are critical facilitation skills, right? And that's what you were just describing there is, I'm setting this expectation that, hey, I've got this timer. We're going to pause for a moment and reflect on this. The other thing that you're pointing out too is that as a facilitator, it can be uncomfortable with the silence, but the timer is a nice little, I'm just waiting for the timer. It's no big deal. It's not
right.
Silence. The timer is happening. The timer is still in the silence. And behind me, I've got this big visual timer. Big fan of the time timer, and creating visual timers can really help people see, you know, the time that's elapsing and know how much time is left. And so that's a fun trick and really fun for large gatherings as well, because, you know, sometimes timers can get lost or, you know, seem like a countdown. So incorporating some visual elements that kind of support the notion of the elapsing of time.
Yeah, that is true, because we have usually people will open up the Range meeting tool, and so everyone can see where the timer is. But I could imagine if it was just, you know, me with my phone, then people can start to be a little uncomfortable. Like, mm-hmm. wait, did the timer go off? Did Jean, like, you know, forget to mention it? Or, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Shared, you know, context. Thing,
we always teach facilitators in our facilitator certification the little acronym WAIT. Have you heard of this facilitator tool?
I have not, no.
It stands for, why am I talking? So that's a fun one to remember as a facilitator, because, you know, if we can step back and let things emerge in the room mm-hmm. and can be very, very powerful. And I think that's another thing about large meetings is how do we create the spark? You know, what are the prompts? What are the props and the people that are required to instigate, you know, like just to elevate what's happening and really encourage people to say and do things. There's a fun one thing that we love to do called 1-2-4-all, where coming back to the silence thing, you know, working silently in the big group, so powerful. You know, it's like It reminds me of, you know, meditation can be really difficult, right? Like having a meditation practice and just taking the time to do it, and especially for really long periods of time. Yet when people go to meditation retreats, they'll like meditate all weekend. Mm-hmm. It's something powerful about doing it with other people. And so when you're together, just honoring that time of reflection is really quite a beautiful moment. And so 1-2-4-All starts with that same kind of idea. Start by yourself, quietly thinking, and then you get in groups of two to share your ideas, and maybe distill down between the two of you which ideas, maybe you combine them together into one idea, or maybe one person's idea is like really, really cool. It's like, yeah, that one's awesome. And then you get into groups of four. And so the ideas are sifting and collating and sorting. And then when we invite the group conversation, even though there's like 50, 100 people in the room, we've already bubbled up some of the big ideas, and people are like sharing other people's ideas. And, you know, it's a lot less crickets when you say,
yeah,
okay, what does everyone think? Because we've already kind of revved up the engines.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems like, in general, there's a sort of like trying to minimize the amount of time where it's just like everyone in one Zoom room and one person speaking. Like a lot of breaking it down, figuring out what the purpose is, figuring out what structures would most support that. And usually it's not the 1 to 50 people.
Yeah, ideally it's never one to many. And, you know, sometimes there's tools we might use where everyone's together at the same time, but to your point, quite often there's people are breaking out and recombining, coming together. But there's certainly moments where everyone's together in the room, but we're trying to minimize that one to many. Any of the one to many that's happening is a facilitated moment, but it's not about content. You know, it's about connection, and it's about invitation, and it's about encouraging. So it might be like, who haven't we heard from? You know, that's the kind of interjections that we're broadcasting to everyone so that, you know, pockets of inspiration are kind of speaking up from around the room. The other thing that's really critical is to make sure it's recorded and captured so we can synthesize it later, because it's really difficult to synthesize with that many people. I mean, that's a classic too many cooks in the kitchen kind of situation. So I always, always recommend, if we're going to do any synthesis, that needs to happen in breakout, so that we might have some strategic way we're breaking people out. Maybe some people are thinking more strategically, some more tactical. Okay, let's split on that. Or maybe there's five different topic areas, so we're gonna do five different groups. It could be randomly. It could be five different phases of a project that people are gonna go off and tackle. And then they come back and we integrate it. And that can be a powerful thing to do as well. Anytime we're gonna make decisions and synthesize, we generally need to get the group smaller, unless we're gonna use some kind of voting tool or some way to kind of capture stuff up. But those things need to be really critically analyzed and decided up front, because if we're going to be, we don't wanna on the fly be changing out our decision-making model when we have a lot of people in the room. So
yeah,
being really clear on that and setting those expectations is pretty important.
So I imagine, right, if there's people who are listening who are in these like 50 plus people, all hands, where it's very much like one to many, you know, most people's videos are off, they're just listening in while they're kind of off doing other stuff, but they want to move to a, you know, a culture where the meetings are engaging, where they don't feel like, oh, I just have to be in meetings and kind of like listen in all the time. What I've heard is that people find it really challenging to know where to start. Like especially if they're not in a position of like, they're the ones running the meeting, how do they make change in their organization? And do you have any, I guess, tips? Or, cause usually if they're not the person who's running it, like, maybe there's a reason that the person who's running it doesn't quite know how to run it in that way. And so the people who are not in that position, just like, do you have any tips or ways that they can take one small step to move it in a more, I guess, engaging meeting culture direction?
Yeah, for sure. Prototypes are the answer, right? So figure out ways that you can try it locally and experiment and give context and examples around moves people could make. Because I don't know how often I've been, you know, it's my career has been punctuated by moments where people are like, I have an amazing idea. And they're explaining their idea. And people are like, I don't kind of get it, or not supporting it, whatever, whatever. And then the thing ends up getting built and you're like, wait, that's what you were talking about, you know? And so, so it's so critical to help bring your ideas to life in some quick way. And so I really just encourage, you know, it's a whole world of difference to overhaul our annual summit where our customers are going to be there. It might be a totally different thing to revisit our monthly pipeline review that has maybe 30 people in it, you know, and like look at little bits and pieces of things that are just kind of shrink the change, right? What are some way that I might experiment with it that might demonstrate the learnings or prove out some of the concepts? And then I take that internal case study and share it around. And, and then I recommend, you know, recording Looms or Zoom recordings of the things, cut it down a little bit. It doesn't have to be a fancy presentation. You just want it to be digestible. So someone doesn't have to watch an hour long thing to get the gist, right? And so just cut it down, like make it like present it in a way that the story is really clear, and you'll find that folks start to understand it. Another thing is we always talk about in change, making sure that we are aligned with shared values. So if there's someone who's planning their all hands and you're like, man, this thing is horrible. Like we just sit and listen to this thing. And then maybe there's some questions, but it's kind of like, I don't know, it could be a lot better. And like, I would say that if you want to influence the person who's organizing the all hands, really start a dialogue around what they value about it, how they see value in their participation in planning it, where they their perceived value of how the organization's benefiting from it, their perceived value of the leaders that are like in there announcing things and whatnot. Really get inside a deep understanding of what's driving some of those values, because then you might realize that, oh, they are really believing that it's important that there's an exchange of information and we can feed off each other. Because oftentimes I'll hear from the CEO, they say, well, you know, I really don't want to do the all hands because it's really, you know, really important, blah, blah, blah. And I ask them, well, why don't you just, I mean, couldn't you just record a video and share it? Because you're basically just, it's almost like a State of the Union address. And, you know, the president doesn't invite us all live to do that. You know, we can watch that on video.
It's like, you don't need to have people rearranging their like children's dinner schedule, right? Like, all the stuff that happens now with the time zones, like it's just unnecessary.
Yeah. And then inevitably I ask them, well, why don't you just do that? And they say, well, I want to kind of vibe off the crowd, or I want to get their reactions, but that never happens. Because they in their head, they think that's why it's live. And that's their aspiration. Right. But if we understand that's the value that they hold, and that's why they're holding on to this construct that it needs to be a live meeting, then now we can enact some change, because now we can address that value. Well, if you want to vibe off of people and you want to get connection and get reactions, what's some changes we can make in the way we do this to increase that? Also, it kind of reminds me of, I saw some research recently from the Futures Forum that said that 70% of leaders think they're being transparent, but less than half of employees think that leaders are being transparent. But that's crazy, right? Because it's one thing if you're just like unconsciously incompetent and you just think like, I don't even know that I need to be transparent. These people are trying to be transparent, but no one in the org thinks they are. It's like crazy. So if they're walking around thinking that it needs to drive connection, it needs to, there's some exchange or some vibe happening, but it's not there, then the best way to drive change around that would be a kind of pulse survey, or have people start rating the all hands. And so and specifically ask questions about those values. Do you feel like this drives more connection? Do you feel like that the presentation is unfolding uniquely based on how people are showing up in the room, or whatever? You know, that's not, probably get a better, refine that question a little bit, but the idea is, can we dig into those values and see if people are experiencing those values or not? Because then with that evidence, then you could come back and say, hey, like, I think we could pull this off, but we're not there yet.
Yeah, because I guarantee people in like large Zoom meetings, one to many, they're not getting vibes from the room, right? Like everyone's got their videos off. People are like, you know, half cooking dinner and like, they're like, oh, this is one of those meetings where I just listen in and, you know, make an appearance on the Zoom screen.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I would even argue, like, of any of the ones I attended from the countless startups that I was in before Voltage Control that were in person, I don't even know how much, I mean, it kind of, most of them felt kind of scripted, you know, because they're like, they want to sound polished. They want to have their message tight and they come in and deliver their thing. And so it's like, it's questionable. Like, I know I would prefer to just rip through it at 2x speed and then kind of think on it for a minute and then maybe join something where we're like, kind of like, oh, that's interesting. Yeah. How does that impact my OKRs or my priorities, you know?
Yeah. I'd say the same goes for daily standups, right? People are like, oh, it's so important that we need to get into this, have this live, like what everyone's working on. But half the time people are like off in the weeds and then everyone just tunes out because they're like, oh, there's that person going off into too much detail. And then you don't remember anything from the standup, right? You just kind of go through the motions of going around the room. And so that's why we've, you know, arranged the async check-in tool, but it's kind of a similar, right? Pattern going on there of like, you think that something is important because of this value. And it's like, well, if you actually want to know what people are working on, why not use the tool where you can actually go and look at what people are working on when you want to know it, right?
100%. I would say live meetings are so often ephemeral. And so that needs to be fixed, like better documentation of what happened so that people don't have FOMO and want to attend it. So less people are attending the meetings, the easier they are to document. It's like, you know, it's a self-fulfilling thing, right? And then, like you say, check-ins and kind of just like, you know, the heartbeat kind of stuff, the stand-ups, the scrums. Yeah. There's just no reason why that can't be async. I mean, it's crazy.
Well, people say they need the connection. Well, then schedule something for connection, right? Like...
And how I'm blocked is it's not connection. Not how I connect with people.
Yeah. You know, some people may, but you know, to each their own.
What's your favorite way to connect in like range? Do you all have rituals around creating connection across the team?
We have the team building question that's part of the daily check-in. I really like that because it lets me kind of write out a little bit more without feeling like I'm taking up space in a live meeting. So I might, you know, someone of the questions might be about like your favorite food. And sometimes I might just write a few words, but if I'm feeling like it and there's something there, I might write, you know, a whole paragraph. And then we also have a weekly game time, which, you know, usually is some drawing games or we've been playing like code names, categories. Just like, it's kind of nice to have this other thing you're doing, but then you can kind of chat and, right. It's a little bit more awkward if it's like, here is social time where everyone needs to show up and then like make conversation. But if you're there to play a game, then the conversation kind of happens with less pressure.
Yeah, no doubt. We love doing those things. We just recently did an escape room together.
Oh,
and
nice.
That was pretty fun. And then I've been experimenting with Tabletop Simulator. So I've been thinking about like seeing who on the team might be interested in playing a board game sometime. But that would be a totally opt-in thing because board games take a while to play. That might be an evening activity, but like, you know, it would be so... just to be opt-in kind of thing. But it's really cool that so many great tools have started to emerge to create more fun and play.
Definitely. Well, I will leave you with this, that we really enjoy playing Draw Battle, and it's also been a cool way to meet other teams. So if the Voltage Control team wants to either play collaboratively where we split into like mixed teams and compete against each other, or have a range versus, we're always up for a draw battle. So
I love it. We'll have to We'll have to figure that out. Get
yeah, you probably want to practice a little bit because we are undefeated. So, and anyone else who wants...
The reason why we should co-mingle then.
Yes, I think co-mingling would probably be better. Yeah. Nice. Better for everyone because we started to feel a little bit guilty.
No doubt. Well, as our friends in the UK like to say, well, let's consult our diaries and we'll find time to do it.
All right, great. Well, thank you so much, Douglas. It was great having you on.
Of course. It was great to be here.
Thanks for listening to Lead Time Chats. I'd love to hear your thoughts or feedback on the episode, so feel free to email me at jean@range.co. And if you're interested in trying out Range with your team, we'd love to offer you 2 months free. Just go to range.co and use promo code LeadTimeChats. Thanks again, and see you next time.